Hello, dear listeners, and welcome to the PDRcast. I'm your host, Mike Baisley, and with me today is a very, very special guest, PDR.
Bonsoir. Hello, PDR.
Bonsoir, indeed. It is a Monday soir.
It is.
Har har, soir soir. This is my Monday mood. Ill-prepared and goofy.
Yes, better than Garfield. That cat hates Mondays, as is my own.
That's true. I could be ill-prepared and Garfield. So, we've got a couple of quick-ish things to discuss this week. Mine is quick, at least. Anyway, what? How about yours? Quick?
Yeah, medium, I mean, long? I'll vamp. I'll make it work.
All right. Sounds good. So diving right in, I'm just going to do a little follow-up on the video game Control, which I talked about last time.
Because we're still in the test phase and we're already out of ideas.
Exactly. So I finished Control, and it was pretty good in the end. The strength of that game, as I talked about last time, is really the atmosphere, the environments, running around the Federal Bureau of Control and seeing all the wacky things going on there. And that, I still believe that is the case, having finished the game. The story and the characters are interesting, but I was a little bit disappointed with the direction that the story took in the end. And I think, even though normally I dive full on into spoilers with whatever I'm talking about, I think I'm going to keep some of the details quiet in this case. But I will just say that there is a big fourth wall break towards the end of the game.
Right.
And it came out of nowhere, and I don't think it landed for me. It was interesting, I guess, but this was not a world that I felt benefited from a fourth wall break. You know, some fiction kind of gains new life when there is a fourth wall break, if you know, because it's funny or because it opens up that fictional world to encompass our real world in an interesting way. And this didn't do that for me. The setting for Control is supposed to be contemporary real world. And so in my mind, there was nothing added by doing a little fourth wall break and a nod to the player having some kind of a presence in the game. I think there were maybe one or two tiny little hints about that kind of thing before the end, but they were really, really, really tiny. And it didn't add anything for me. It really, if anything, it took away from the atmosphere of the game.
Right.
Because they created such a great little fictionalized version of our world, themed around supernatural things. Again, very much in the vein of like X-Files or something like that. And it just didn't need some sort of spooky suggestion that, oh, this might be connected to the real world that you live in, too. Like, I didn't think it needed that at all. It didn't benefit from that in any way. And so the end of the game fell a little flat for me. Having said that, I did still enjoy it right up until the end. And I don't know how familiar you are with achievements and trophies and that kind of thing.
I get
games.
It.
Yeah, okay. On PlayStation, they call them trophies. And I actually got all of them.
Oh, wow. 100% club.
Yeah, that's right. Now, granted, it's not actually that difficult in this game. I think about 10% of everybody who played the game on PlayStation got all of the trophies, because it tells you what, you know, how many or what percentage of the players have earned a given trophy for a game. And that's really high. Like,
that is
a
high?
Lot of games. Yes.
Most gamers are slack.
There's a special trophy that you get for getting all of the other trophies, and it's the Platinum Trophy in PlayStation parlance. And on most games, the percentage of players who have gotten the Platinum Trophy is maybe 2 or 3%.
Oh, wow.
Sometimes way less than that, depending on how hard it is to get that Platinum Trophy. But it's usually very low, and in this case, it was when I finished the game, at least, it was somewhere around 10%, and that's quite high for getting all the trophies in a game. So again, it's not that hard, but it's rare for me to get a Platinum Trophy. I usually don't put in the effort to do all the finicky little things that are required to get all the trophies, but I was enjoying my time with this game enough that I wanted to do every last little thing to get all of those completed. I had a really good time with it, and I know down the road there's going to be new content added that continues the story further, and it's very likely that I'll get that, because I want to spend more time running around the bureau and experiencing all the bizarre stuff. I just hope they don't lean too hard on the fourth wall breaks, and you know, meta gags and stuff like that, unless they really turn that into something interesting, which for me it isn't thus far. But those are my final sort of feelings on the game. It was a lot of fun. I love the atmosphere. Story fell a little flat in the end, but I'm looking forward to revisiting that environment once some more story content appears.
And what about gameplay?
It's good. It's not amazing, but it's a good 7.5 out of 10, maybe 8 out of 10, something like that. So it's no slouch, but that's not what makes the game. That's not what makes me want to return to the game. I'm not sort of craving the mechanical feel of the game or anything like that. It's really just wandering around those environments and reading all the interesting little memos that
side matter or whatever you would call it.
Yeah, exactly. Like all of the hinting at bizarre mysteries and experiments that have taken place in the bureau. All that kind of world building stuff is really fun. Again, gameplay's fine, but it's not anything particularly special.
Still, sounds like the game had a pass until the end.
That's right. Did you? I'm trying to remember. We touched a little bit on the fact that you had watched some gameplay.
Yes, and then when you said you might try streaming. And then I stopped watching the one I was watching, and then I don't think your streaming worked out, so I just stopped in the middle. I never really felt compelled to get back to it.
Right.
I was mostly watching as a way of keeping up with you on the topic. So
I gotcha. Yeah. I wanted to stream, but then Twitch demanded that I give them my phone number to make that happen, and I decided I didn't want Twitch to have my phone number. So
corporations deserve our phone number.
Yeah.
That is a fact. Is Twitch a corporation? I assume not. Or at least
yeah,
that is owned by
they're owned by Amazon. So
well, there you go.
Yeah. I mean, to be fair, Amazon probably already has my phone number from some order that I placed, but you know, it's the principle of the thing.
Exactly. Why make it easier for them?
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, I think that's my piece on Control. Yeah, usually I don't avoid spoilers, I guess, but it's such an interesting game. Other people might want to experience that story for themselves if they haven't already, and maybe they'll like it more than I did. But yeah, fourth wall break, not necessary.
Right. I don't know how much I want to get into it, because I feel like I could go off on this topic for an hour. But Deadpool was a character who, back in like the late 90s, early 2000s, I was very much into. And he has, as his popularity has grown, so has his tendency to do fourth wall breaks and meta commentary. And
right.
While that was always there, it's become the overwhelming facet of the character. And like, again, I haven't read a Deadpool comic in years just because I lost interest, but I do feel like they've lost the plot of what made him interesting to me, but apparently that's what makes him interesting to everyone else. So I guess it's just, I understand fourth wall breaking can be clever and innovative, but it isn't always.
I agree completely. And I think that you, it's a way to make a story that's less interesting suddenly more interesting.
Right,
it can
right.
be very clever and well crafted, and when it is, it's a lot of fun, and it's it can feel very novel. But it's not something to just be tacked on to a story for the heck of it.
Exactly.
It also gets tired quickly, I find.
Yes.
Like it's a big twist that can be a lot of fun, but yeah, it's so easy to overdo it.
It worked in a Duck Amuck, but if every Looney Tunes cartoon was the same way, they'd be gibbering.
I'll take your word on that.
You better.
I shall. It's been too long since I've watched Looney Tunes stuff, and I don't know that I've ever known any of the episodes by name. So,
I own the Golden Collections on DVD. Even in this age of DVDs being irrelevant, I still got them.
Oh, there we go. Living in living in irrelevance.
That's my motto.
PBR story.
Yeah. And also, of course, Deadpool suffers from people who don't get that he wasn't just a naughty superhero. He was actually a bad guy with a whole story arc. But that's a topic for another day.
Yeah. No, there's a real drive to take the villainy out of characters when they're protagonists, because and turn them into like charming rogues of some
yes.
kind. And that's an archetype that should take a breather, I think.
All right, so are we ready for me?
I think we're ready for you.
I'm going to do something a little controversial. I am also talking about a computer game this week.
Ba-ba-ba.
I'm stepping on your territory. We had clearly delineated
broken.
You were computer games and I was literally anything and everything else.
That's
but,
right.
Oh well, tough. I'm the one the podcast is named after. So, it has come to my attention that this, the year of our Lord 2019, is the 30th anniversary of a game series known as Quest for Glory. You are at least tangentially familiar with it, yes?
Yes.
Yes. It is, I've been thinking about this, one of the most formative games I've played in my life. I am not the kind of gamer who likes shooters, and I enjoy Mario, but platforming is difficult. I'm not the kind who enjoys games where you need reaction time. I like puzzles and walking around and exploring. So the adventure games in the late 80s, early 90s, I'd say, heck, all the way up to now, I can play an adventure game. But that was specifically my scene in the world of gaming.
Right.
And Sierra Games, that's Sierra Online was a company making games back in those days. They made a lot of games with quests in the title. There was King's Quest, there was Space Quest, there was Police Quest, and Heroes Quest, which I guess had to change its name because there was an existing board game that had the same name, became Quest for Glory. And for a long time, I would have said Space Quest was my favorite of those games, but as I've gotten older, I think it's Quest for Glory is the one that had the most impact on me. And right. So, yeah, it's their 30th anniversary. I thought I would just talk about them a bit.
Cool.
That makes sense.
I played, I think, the original Police Quest.
Right.
I played a couple of the Space Quests, and they always were the ones that I liked the most, but yes. I never actually owned any of them.
Really?
So I only ever played a few snippets at other people's houses. I did have Quest for Glory 4, so I put a decent bit of time into that. And I bore witness to some of 2, and maybe 1. And then I played King's Quest 6 quite a bit, but I don't think I played any of the others. So that's my Sierra Games background.
Nice. I would say King's Quest is arguably the most famous, and I certainly enjoyed King's Quest. Space Quest, as I said, and as you said, it was definitely the funniest. It broke the fourth wall as well, which is maybe part of the reason, actually, now that I think of it, that I like Quest for Glory better. The comedy in Space Quest was excellent.
Yes.
Like, you'd have the protagonist, Roger Wilco, could argue with the narrator, and especially in the voiced games, that narrator played by a man named Gary Owens, who is excellent, who does a lot of voice work, and I'm not even going to list his credits because they're innumerable. But as awesome as the humor and the fourth wall breaking was in those games, it also kind of made the story less. When they tried to have a story, it felt less important because, like, this game's a comical farce. What could this story matter? Quest for Glory, on the other hand, I felt it was in a fantasy setting like King's Quest, but less fairy tale and more Dungeons and Dragons. And even that, no. Dungeons and Dragons is not a good touch point for Quest for Glory. It is folklore, but less fairy tale. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think so. It's not quite as fanciful as as fairy tales. Like, it doesn't have that. I should have put it. Well, I mean, how does this sound to you? It is fairy tale like, but in the original text of Brothers Grimm fairy tale kind of way, not in the lightened,
more modern Disney sort of.
Yeah. Does that sound about right to you?
It's not perfect, but it definitely works for the purposes today.
All right.
I do think it's important to go over. Of the 5 games in the series, the first one was set in a town called Spielberg, which is German for a game town or something to that effect. It was sort of a Germanic area and drew on that kind of folklore, except it also had dinosaurs, because, of course. The second one was in Shapir, which is a Arabian Nights kind of setting. The third one was in several towns. Tarna, I think, was the main one. It was an African sort of setting. The fourth one was in Mordavia, which is, what's the word I'm looking for? Kind of a Transylvania sort of feel.
And yeah, that was my take on it.
That's the best game. And the fifth one was in, Cripes, I should know this, Silmariot, I believe. And it's sort of Greek and Crete, and so Roman gods and that sort of stuff. But as I unquestionably say that number 4 is the best one, both for atmosphere and story and graphics, and just everything about that game was good, except how terribly, terribly buggy it was. But yeah. The thing about this series is it took the adventure games with wandering around solving puzzles with your inventory, which is something that I will say has had a profound effect on my life, I realized, because I am the type of person who has an inventory. My car, I could solve many problems with the things I have in my car. Like, I carry what can only be described as a purse, because the idea of not having access to things readily, like, I don't understand why everyone doesn't do that. But I think either I took that from Roger Wilco always having something in his pockets to save the day, or I gravitated towards those games because that's my natural inclination. But I'm definitely an inventory kind of person.
Interesting.
Yeah, but Where was I going with that? Okay, yes, Quest for Glory, or Heroes Quest as it was. They combined that sort of gameplay with role-playing elements. So you could play as, in the first game, a fighter, a magic user, or a thief. And the thing was, in the game, puzzles could be solved, most of them anyway, could be solved three different ways. So if you're a fighter, you can bash down the door. If you're a magic user, you can cast a spell that opens the door. Or if you're a thief, you can pick the lock and open the door. So basically, anything you come to in the puzzle or in the game has multiple ways depending on what you're playing. And also, in addition to that, there are scenes that only one of the classes will deal with. For example, I remember in Quest for Glory 2, for example, there's all these houses you can break into as a thief. There's a wizard school that you can go to if you're a wizard, or if you're a fighter, you can fight, and if you're honorable, become a paladin at the end of the game. So, in theory, this should have added a lot of replay value. But here's what happened when little PDR played the game. In the first game, because another element of the game is that you can save your character at the end of the game and carry that same character to the next game and continue increasing their stats and such.
Right, I forgot about that. Yeah, it was that was a cool thing.
In the first game, I created, I believe the character, yes, he started off as a thief, but I gave him points in every skill so that I didn't want to miss out on anything. I don't like games that are too hard for me, so having every skill meant I have options, like I can solve problems different ways. And I also was the type of kid who, as I said, you can increase your stats. So I wanted to increase my climbing stat. I would just go into the woods. I would climb for an hour until my stat was like maxed out. And then the rest of the game, I didn't have to worry about it. I was ready to go, which is not fun. But it
clearly that's how the developers intended you to
exactly
play.
but it is the sort of thing I like to do. Like, I like repetitive tasks where I can just be doing something and accomplishing something and enjoying myself while I'm like thinking about dinosaurs or whatever I'm doing. So yes, I created a character who had every stat, and by the end of the game I was maxed out. And so I did, in the first game I was a thief, I did thief sort of things, but when I imported that character into the second game, I don't know for sure why this happened, but I assume it's because I had stats in other fields, or whatever you would call it.
Okay.
The game thought I was a fighter, or imported me as a fighter or something. So
interesting.
I played through that game, I still had magic and stuff, like all my stats, and I continued getting all my stats maxed out. It's harder in Quest for Glory 2, because you, there's actually the only, that's the one with the time limit, so, but unimportant. At the end of that game, I had behaved honorably, so I got turned into a paladin, and then when I carried that character over into Quest for Glory 3, I played that game as a paladin, which has some cool quests. At the end of that game, your character is teleported away and is stranded in Mordavia, the best like place there is. My rationale was like, I don't have my paladin sword or my shield or anything, but I still know magic, so I played through that game as a wizard. By this point, it was a choice, like the game wasn't messing up my import anymore. But I thought that would make sense for the character. And so, and Quest for Glory 5 is hardly significant really to comment on, but the lesson is I played through a character with all, like, my character went through every category. I think they wanted you to play through the games, like, replay and see the different things. I kind of cheated, and I both had the best of worlds, but I also missed out on a lot, if that makes sense.
Like,
I was trying to have everything, but that meant in each game there were things that I didn't get because I wasn't playing the correct character.
I see what you mean. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. And I think that's part of it. You mentioned achievements. the trying to get everything in a game is the sort of thing that if I enjoy a game, I would probably do. And it's probably also a reason I don't game that much. Just, I don't have the patience.
Makes sense.
But I love those games. Quest for Glory 4, as I have repeatedly said, is the best of them. Quest for Glory 5 came at a point in the mid to late 90s that was not kind to the adventure game genre.
No, it was dying at that point.
Yes. Shooters and 3D graphics and all that stuff was coming in. And for whatever reason, money, I guess, those games thought they needed to be more like those games. Those successful games.
Oh, did 5 try and make the jump to 3D?
It did, yes.
Oh, no.
So, as you said, you played 4. It was, like, cool. The graphics were not, like, they wouldn't hold up today. If you average sprites and walking around, painted backgrounds, all, of course, pixelated, because at the time, everything was pixelated. Not, like, Atari pixelated, but for the resolutions we're used to today.
No, I know what you mean.
And then when you were speaking to a character, you'd have this nice little cartoony close-up of them. The cartoony style was perfect for that game. And if they had continued that in the next game, it would have continued to be perfect. But no, all the characters in Part 5 are ugly, early 3D models.
Made up of 5 triangles apiece.
Better than that. It's not 4D boxing or whatever. But
okay.
Yeah.
Oh, nice, nice reference. I love that game.
See, I'm a gamer.
That's right.
But yeah, the graphics were... I remember thinking at the time they weren't great, and I doubt they've improved.
Yeah.
There are things I like about Quest for Glory 5. Graphics and gameplay are not them.
So many games in that game series in that time period, like the late 90s.
Right.
Had great looking 2D art, and then they decided that the next installment in the series needed to be fancy in 3D because
exactly.
That's the direction things were going, and subsequently became a horrible looking mess.
And yet, as a casual observer of games, it seems like a lot of indie games these days are sensibly sort of embracing retro 2D and even pixelated stuff.
Oh yeah, to the point where it's largely tiresome. and in fact, all we've gone past peak nostalgia for pixel art and sprite work, and although there's still a lot of that going on, but we're entering an era of nostalgia for the janky looking late 90s
nice.
3D graphics. So there are some indie games coming out now that have like an intentional ugly PlayStation 1 era kind of look to them.
Interesting.
Which is interesting because, of course, you know, any graphical style can be made appealing with the right art direction.
And I also feel like gameplay sensibilities will have improved over the decades and the games will be better.
Oh, goodness. Yeah. I mean, the like gameplay mechanics. People aren't designing games that feel like those games to play. They're just designing games that look like they come from that era. So
fun. I'm a gamer.
Old gamer PDR.
But yeah, I think that's everything I had to say about it. It's just a very good game series that I will look back on fondly forever. The creators, Laurie and Corey Cole are their names. They're a married couple.
Okay.
They do not have the rights to Quest for Glory, but they've, through Kickstarter and I think beyond, they've created a game series called Hero U, like as in university for heroes, that is set in the universe of Quest for Glory, which the world building and stuff was never its strongest point, for me it was always the characters and the adventures. But I think I supported them on that Kickstarter. I played through the first Hero U game. I am currently not in a financial situation I can continue to support them, but I will. I wish them the best of luck, and I'm glad that they're doing it.
Cool. So what's Hero you like? I mean, is it gameplay wise? Is it pretty much a current day follow up on the Quest for Glory style, or?
It's similar. You don't get to choose a class or anything. You're a kid starting out in school at this University for Heroes. It's not, I think it's more action and less adventure than I would have liked.
Okay.
There's more fighting, and I mean there was fighting in the other games too, but it was never the main thing.
Right.
I think the characters could have been a little better. There could have been, I don't want to say anything too bad about it. I enjoyed it. I legitimately did play through that one 3 times because it wasn't terribly long. Like I learned my lesson about not having it all. I could try things on their own time instead of trying to have them all at once. I would rank it above Quest for Glory 5 and 2, but under 1, 3, and of course 4.
Okay, interesting.
Yeah.
I had another question I was going to ask you, and it went into my brain. Yes. Did the later entries in Quest for Glory, especially 4, because I don't remember 4 terribly well, though I do remember that I liked it quite a bit, but I don't think I ever beat it, and I wonder if it might have been because of a bug.
Yes, probably.
Did that series of games suffer from the thing that arguably killed the adventure game genre in the 90s, which was the problem of adventure game moon logic, as it was commonly referred to?
I do not feel that it did, especially given that every game was designed to have multiple, or every puzzle rather, was designed to have multiple solutions. So
Right.
even if the main solution was weird, you could always just try throwing rocks at it. Like that would be the solution from a fighter's point of view. So just brute force your way through. Your character might be a wizard, but if he's strong enough, he can bash a door down.
Cool. So do you think the RPG elements then kind of allowed the
Counteracted the
yeah. Oh, that's cool.
It should, of course, I should go without saying, or I shouldn't go without saying that LucasArts also has some excellent adventure games. Less prone to those kind of puzzles, but not entirely less. They do, I think, I feel like from the internet, they get more nostalgia than Sierra does. And I can understand it, but I will always be a Sierra guy.
Yeah. I think that the LucasArts games had a lot of them had sort of a character first kind of approach. Like they were very the Sierra characters, well, in Quest for Glory you were making your own character, so there wasn't the
Yeah,
protagonist didn't
that is,
have
in a way, that's
heaps of
something it lacked.
personality.
There was
Right.
no personality to that guy.
Whereas, I'm thinking of the Day of the Tentacle
Right.
and Grim
Sam and
Fandango and
Max.
Sam and Max and
Oh,
Full
Grim
Throttle. Like,
Fandango's good.
it was like they all of those games essentially start a cartoon character that
Right.
you could become attached to right away. And they all tended to be pretty thoroughly comedy games as well. Not that there weren't stakes in them, but I think those elements contribute to them being more commonly remembered than the Sierra games anyway. Because when I think, maybe it's just my level of exposure to the Sierra games versus the LucasArts games, but when I think back on the Sierra games, they're hazier in my mind. I find it
Right.
more difficult to pull out details where the LucasArts games, I can immediately picture characters and things like that. The other thing too is that a lot of those LucasArts games have been remastered and re-released in the last, 10 years, 15 years, something like that. So
Right.
I think the life of those games has been extended because of that.
And they deserve it. I'm not actually anti-LucasArts, but
Oh yeah, no, I don't.
Grim Fandango definitely proved that the transition to 3D was possible.
Yes. That was a very good example of that. And that was the I would say the last big adventure game for a while. I think adventure games started to come back in the mid to late 2000s.
Right.
But there was definitely a period where they kind of fell off the radar. So I guess the last question I have on Quest for Glory is how accessible is that series now for somebody who never played them and might want to play it now? Do you know?
I cannot imagine that any of those, especially if you start with Heroes Quest or Quest for Glory 2, where you still have a text parser, there's no way a kid today is going to sit through that, I don't think.
Fair enough.
I think, I know text parser games still get made and such, but I'm sure that's nostalgia for people our age.
Right.
The ones, once you've got the clicking interface and stuff, I think, like, you'd be able to play it, but I do think that a kid today has so many options for gaming, I don't think that they would play those games.
Right.
Yeah.
So if someone who played them when they were young and wants to revisit them, wants to play them, like, are they available on Steam or anything? Like, how are they?
I have them on Steam.
Okay. So they're easy to acquire, and they'll run on modern hardware and all that.
Right. I can't remember if I have the fifth one on Steam, but really, as long as you get four.
Yeah.
But yes, it is. I would say you could find them online.
Cool.
In some form. I have most Sierra games on Steam.
Okay. Did you ever play any of that new King's Quest that they came out with?
I did not.
A couple years ago. Yeah, I didn't either.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind trying it, though, see what it's like.
Yeah, I remember hearing that it was okay.
Yeah.
But,
I'd say sadly, the last adventure game I really remember playing through was Strong Bad's Cool Game for Attractive People.
Oh, nice.
Which was a few years ago now. It was like the start of when Telltale was coming in.
Yeah,
And then Telltale died, is my understanding.
Yes, they kind of imploded. Yeah. From what I understand, they are coming back, but essentially as a different company, like different owners, and most of the staff that were there before when it kind of collapsed are not being brought back. So who knows what they'll be doing going forward. But someone has purchased the company name,
right? Yeah,
effectively. So yeah, and the last I heard is that they are supposed to be sort of reemerging as a game developer, but what their output will be like, who knows. Well, shall we dip into the mailbag and see if there's any questions for a good old PDR?
I suppose that would be a good thing to do.
All right. So, question one comes to us from Jeb. Jeb says, Dear PDR, what gets you out of bed in the morning?
Well, the fact is, I'm nocturnal. I do not get out of bed in the morning. I go into the morning. Shut your face, Jeb.
All right, well. it's the last time Jeb will be listening to this podcast.
It better be.
Well, this segues well into our next question. This one comes to us from first-time listener Jill. I'm searching for the worst podcast ever. Yours is a clear frontrunner, but can you recommend one that is worse?
No, I think you're at the bottom of the barrel.
See, I was going to say anything that NPR does.
Fair enough.
Podcasts, you know, I figure we must be better than them.
Yeah, I'm willing to go with that.
All right.
And the whole going by three initials thing?
Yeah, I think they copied you.
Yeah. I've been saying that for years as of right now.
Exactly. Well, on that long, awkward pause, I think we'll call it an episode.
We better.
Thank you, dear listener. for sitting through another one of these podcasts. Join us next time when I'll be hosting once more, and we'll have another very special guest who will most likely be PDR. Good night to you all. Good night to you, PDR. Thank you for joining me today.
Thank you.
Is that it?
I think so.
All right. All right. I think that sounded pretty good. I just want to check my waveform.
Yeah, I got a nice big spike.
Yeah, I got a little spike there. Okay.
Little Spike, of course, being the star of Cowboy Bebop Babies.
Absolutely. Yeah. That's a good one.